honey badger is really pretty badass. They have no regard for any other animal whatsoever. Look, and it's just grunting and ew, eating snakes. Ew, what's that, a mouse? Oh, that's nasty. Oh, they're so nasty.
This episode of the Coin Spies podcast is brought to you by Badger Wallet. Head out to badger.bitcoin.com and begin to experience the Tokenbrian explosion. Tokens on the BCH blockchain. Get your Badger Wallet and essentially what you have is an SLP token vault, full support for Simple Ledger Protocol tokens on the BCH chain. You can send and receive every SLP token imaginable, and now they're offering a really cool tool called Cash ID, which enables users to sign in to web pages using their BCH keys. Badger Wallet, download it today at badger.bitcoin.com.
What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the CoinSpice podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
Well, this is a really timely episode in the sense that I believe if you look at demographics, if you look really at where the future of peer-to-peer cash will be, as much as I want to say near and dear to my heart, it should be in the United States and in the West. I do believe it's going to be in the East. And I think a sleeping giant, especially for peer-to-peer cash and permissionless money, is in India. So it is fantastic, Keshav Ramnarla, to have you on as a trader, as someone who has some insight there, and of course, living in India. Thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you, Kelso. I think it's completely my pleasure for being here. I love what's happening with CoinSpice and your episodes, and it's really an honor that I can be here and speak from perspective that very few people get to understand from where they are, because the scene here is quite different, both in good ways and not so good ways as well. And it would be great if I can share that and people get to understand what's happening here in India.
Yeah, India is on the map. It's hit headlines, geez, I would say for at least the last 2 years, but it's really ramped up in recent weeks. We're speaking now at the end of April in 2019, and it looks like the Supreme Court is set to rule. But I've been hearing that for, I can't tell you how many months now, and the headlines are all saying in the West anyway that India is going to ban Bitcoin, ban cryptocurrencies outright. And so can you kind of take us through sort of what's happened through where we are now in India?
Yeah, sure. I think let me start from a little earlier from where the whole thing started off is that India, if you don't know, India had a major event in 2016, November, when the Prime Minister, in a matter of a speech, made 86% of the cash useless. So that was called demonetization. And that's where I think the first boost for Bitcoin happened, and people, at least the rich class, started moving their money into Bitcoin. That's where the first thing happened.
Yeah, just to step on you for a second, you're talking about Modi with his it was overnight, right? I mean, you guys went from having what would be the equivalent in U.S. dollars of say tens and twenties, very very far-reaching circulating paper dollars to the next day being, you know, give it up, it's illegal, you can't have it. Is that right?
Yeah, it was not even next day. It was a matter of an hour. I mean, 86% of the cash was completely useless. And unlike other Western countries, India is predominantly a cash-based economy. I mean, everything goes through cash. And credit cards, online transactions are very slightly used on bigger stores. But my daily groceries, vegetables, most of these things happen in cash. And We have a lot of small scale industries. Everything is cash based economy. And that was a huge hit. And even for individual poor people, right? So the lot of poor women who hide cash from their husbands so that they don't just spend it on drinking and other stuff like that. And all of these, then all of them were forced to take out all the reserve that they've saved across the years just because it was worthless. And I personally stood in queues at banks to exchange the cash that I had for several hours. It was a pretty chaotic time. The ATMs were running out of cash. People were going here and there. The country was not ready for alternative modes of or payments like digital. Credit cards were very little used at that time. So everyone was struggling. The small scale business were hit a lot. People actually died waiting in queues to get the cash out.
Oh my God.
And it was an absolute disaster. The reason the Prime Minister announced that was to get the black money to come out into the market, and so that the idea was that if people had to return back that money back to exchange it for proper currency, the assumption was at least 40% of the currency would not come into circulation and the Reserve Bank of India can print that new money and boost the economy. But yeah, the people were even more smarter than Prime Minister Modi, and 99.9% of the currency that was blacklisted all came into the coffers of the Reserve Bank in India. And the goal for that exercise was completely useless. And then the tune of the government changed, saying that okay, the other goal would encourage digital payments, and they kind of moved the goalpost to that, and they made a huge marketing campaign behind that, where initially they were announcing that this much amount of money has come in, but towards the end they stopped announcing that because they realized that somehow everybody figured out to send all their black money to exchange it for actually the proper money, and it worked, and people believed that the Prime Minister was doing a great job, and subsequently before they announced how much money they got back, which was almost 100%, where they delayed the announcement, and in the meantime there were other state elections that happened, and this proved as a plank for them to win at different places, but at the end it was a complete disaster, which literally slowed down a speeding economy. It's like a speeding economy was like a fast train that was moving and was halted in its tracks if someone pulled the brakes, and because it was primarily a cash-based economy. So that was a tough time. Even after the demonetization was over for several months, that was very difficult. ATMs were not having enough cash. We were running out of cash. We tried to save that. But at the same time, out of necessity, people had to look for other alternatives. People started accepting credit cards. There was an app called Paytm, which was a digital wallet, which completely came into focus then. Nobody knew about that. Very few people used that. But during that period, out of necessity, almost everyone on the street, everyone rich and poor, started using Paytm, and it became a huge hit. And it's literally like our existing BCH wallet, where you can do a quick micro transaction and it happens instantly with almost zero fees, because at that time they removed the fees as well. And that's where there was a major boost, at least for that particular app. And here's the interesting and sad part. When they moved the goalpost saying that it was we were going to make a digital based economy for payments and everything, but after the demonetization happened, within probably 6 months, the country again reverted back to being a predominantly cash-based economy again.
Wow.
And so the entire exercise was a huge PR campaign, but a major disaster for the Indians. And that's where we all realize the power that a government has over our own money. I mean, literally in a matter of hour.
No, I can see it, and I remember writing about it and reading it. But now you're putting it into perspective. It's so much richer. See, we don't have that here in the United States. Our politicians are amazing. They don't make any mistakes, Kesha. So I can't at all identify with what you're saying. No, that's unbelievable, because it got so much press, and they did it under the rubric, like you say, of black money. But what they meant, of course, was and what they tried to tie it to was terrorism and all these other things. And it really did. It, like you say, some people died as a result of this. It just kind of crushed the especially low income people. And you know what an incredibly insane move to try to shift 1.3 billion people or whatever it is in hours.
Absolutely
unreal. So
absolutely.
But a sort of down, maybe a perversely good effect is that it woke a lot of Indians up to digital cash. You know, if it's not cryptocurrency at first, at least the idea, right?
Yeah, in a way, I always felt that Indians had this intuition, because we have the largest amount of privately held gold. Almost every single Indian has an amount of gold. Every single Indian, rich or poor, and everybody has gold. We have tons. Right. So gold is part of our culture. I mean, every person who gets married gets some amount of gold from his parents or from his in-laws. So every single person in our country, it's part of our culture. It's part of our wedding traditions that they get a certain amount of gold. And it's all physical gold. It's not like this trading gold and all this stuff. Everybody wants to own gold and in a jewelry form or anything. But it's a huge deal here. It's such a big problem for the government, is that because they have to they have put a lot of import duties to discourage this consumption of gold by people. But still, it keeps going on. Yeah, but that's pretty amazing.
And so there's a connection there. It doesn't seem obvious at first, but there's a connection to the idea of gold and cash and digital currencies. So
exactly.
How does the government then become so convinced that crypto is something they need to crack down on? Because how we started our little jag here, which just incredible insights, is that we started on, well, how, why is the Supreme Court doing, or at least considering what it is in terms of a ban? How do we get there? And so we started with demonetization, talking about the culture of Indians, that they've always had this natural intuition of being savers and finding money that's durable, that's maybe beyond government control, if not uncensorable, something close. So, and they pick up with more digital usage. So how do we get to where we are today?
Right. So Indians have this ability, especially because there's a younger population, the majority of the population below 35 is there. And a lot of technically adopt people, and you know that we are trying to become a software hub for the world. So there's a lot of innovators who behind the scenes have built up these exchanges and other ways for people to adopt cryptocurrencies. And it all happened kind of below the scene. And usually it doesn't, because the people in power always have a hand somewhere at some level of your business. But for cryptocurrencies and trading and everything, it kind of happened below the scenes until it was all over the newspapers that Bitcoin reached $10,000, and suddenly everyone woke up. The exchanges, the government woke up. The government sent the tax department to raid all these exchanges to get the accounts and all the details from them. And this is how it happens. As an analyst, I can understand that if for every action, there's an opposite reaction. If right. Bitcoin, which is supposed to be an alternative to the government fiat, has grown exponentially in price, there has to be some kind of reaction from a government which is usually threatened by it, or in our case, I believe that the people in power feel that they missed out of the boat. Usually any business that happens here, at least the big businesses, people need to be greasing their palms. So it was an obvious move by them that they start tightening their control and showing their power. So it started off by doing IT raids on all the exchanges, and they collected all the information of the investors. Then for the top 5,000 high net worth individuals and traders, they sent out individual IT notices. So all of this started happening once Bitcoin hit $10,000. So that's when I predicted that this will only start getting worse, because first, it is a direct threat to what was happening. Second is because these people in power, the politicians, had no inkling of what happened, and they did not get any benefit out of all this huge amount of money these exchange owners have made or the traders have made, and they had to flex their muscles, right? So steadily it started going worse, and politicians and leaders in the parliament started asking these questions that to the finance minister and to the government, that why cryptocurrency is being encouraged, because it is used for terrorism, and all the usual the usual narrative was being asked in the worst possible way. And I remember seeing the speech where the finance minister was saying that, okay, cryptocurrency is not acceptable as a legal tender, but for the other part of trading, they were going to look at that and generate a bill or draft a bill. And eventually, it led to a situation where they could not take a quick decision, because they do everything very slowly. They ended up telling the banks to just stop working with the exchanges. And the banks had to comply, and I'm sure they were happy to comply, because this is a direct threat to their business model as well. And they cut off the link to all the exchanges. And that was enough to start off the rumor mills. And once people realized, the traders realized that the exchanges were being cut off by bank links, and when exchanges announced this, everybody panicked and they wanted to remove their money out of that, because they didn't know what was going to happen next. There was no clear indications being given. RBI was giving out circulars for many years that it will do something, and it was cautioning its investors, but it never did any action. One fine day, it sent a circular saying that banks are no longer allowed to deal with the exchanges, and exchanges didn't have a choice but to inform their investor that, yeah, you better take out your money, because we're going to close down the fiat channels. And even me, I removed some of my this thing. But so it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction by the government, for whatever purposes. I think the purposes were not right. It was more of for their own benefit. And ultimately, it was removed as an option, and people just exited. And after that, the exchanges tried to fight that order, justification of the order, by going to the Supreme Court and putting a case. And in fact, for me personally as well, I remember my bank calling me up and asking about a lot of these transactions and all these things. And I told, okay, these are normal transactions that I've done. And on further inquiry, again and again by different people at the bank, I said that some of that is due to my cryptocurrency trading and everything. And they said that I could no longer use my bank account for that particular purpose.
Wow.
And if I wanted to continue using that bank account or having that bank account, I would have to come to the bank and give a letter in writing that I would no longer use that bank account for trading. Okay. And not only that, I had to give in writing that I will close all the accounts that I opened with the exchanges.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's unbelievable. It was actually the exchanges then who appealed to the higher court to try to get some relief against the Reserve Bank of India and its sort of downward pressure on the banks it controlled. Saying that that basically banks can no longer do business with any sort of crypto outfit, and you said they were only too happy to comply because of the existential threat that this currency, or these types of currencies rather, tend to pose. And then it was just a matter, kind of, banks just sort of picking up, well, look, you know, we have to do this, and And so then it got as far as them saying that you couldn't even use your own account in your own way, like your fiat account, unless you showed proof of not I guess engaging in trading on Indian crypto exchanges, huh?
Hey, crypto savages, this is C. Edward Kelso breaking in with a quick and very shameless plug. CoinSpice.io is a feisty pirate ship. We depend, rely on almost entirely organic growth, which means our audience really does the marketing for us, and there's nothing more powerful than word of mouth. If you read an article you like on CoinSpice.io, if you listen to a podcast and you enjoy the content, or if you're just pissed, please promote us on social media, wherever you're at, wherever that is, whether it's Reddit, whether it's YouTube, the Telegram, you name it, the Twitter, like us, retweet, all that great stuff. You can always find detailed show notes for every podcast on the corresponding page at coinspice.io. There you'll find links to our respective podcasts, your favorite platform like iTunes. Please give us a rating. Please give us a subscribe. You know all that good stuff. It helps the pirate ship remain afloat. It keeps us going. We appreciate it. As always, you can contact me personally if you have questions, concerns, you want to hear from a particular guest, you have a news tip at Kelso, K-E-L-S as in Sam, O, at coinspice.io. Thanks again for listening. We sure do appreciate it. And back to the episode.
Yeah, that's true. Whichever exchanges I had linked to this particular bank account, I would have to stop using them and also have to close that accounts. I mean, give them in writing that I have to close my accounts, and I still, and they were like vindicated that since the finance minister was saying that this is not a legal tender, they were kind of vindicated that, okay, this is not legal. So in fact, I remember when I was signing the letter, the bank manager was giving an advice that, okay, see, this is a good thing that has happened to you. Now you don't have the risk of this falling currency or doing something illegal. And he was actually giving me financial advice. I was like, okay, fine. Thank you for that. Yeah, here's your letter. And yeah, goodbye. Yeah, that did happen. And yeah, the exchanges appealed. And I was a part of a community of where some of the big entrepreneurs in this space were part of that. Some of the exchange owners was part of that. Traders, other people were part of that. Some of the most prominent people in India in this space, although it is not a big group, was part of that. And I remember how different people were trying to find ways to tackle this. I know there was a particular lawyer who was engaged, who was an expertise in this field to take care of this case. But the Indian system, the Indian legal system is built in such a way that your case can be delayed indefinitely. For example, if I put a property case on you, and if you take over my house and I put a civil case on you saying that you haven't taken that, the verdict could take probably 30 years.
So, you say 30 years?
Yep. I could use the legal system loopholes to delay the verdict for a particular civil case by decades. So that's how chaotic the system is, especially because the existing system is overrun by a huge multitude of cases which have been unsolved, and there's a shortage of judges and lawyers or whatever, right? So it was no wonder that although these guys have appealed, every time there is a hearing that has come, the government lawyer would give some kind of an excuse and delay it to the next session. So like that, it used to get delayed, and it was always in this gray area. It was neither legal nor it was announced as completely illegal. So nobody knew what is happening. It's still in that gray area. But meanwhile, the bright thing is that in the meanwhile, the exchange is quickly adopted by building up the technology to do a P2P trading. So that was, so it took like, I think 2 to 3 to 4 months where new exchanges are propped up, or existing exchanges built up the technology to do P2P trading or to deposit and withdraw fiat through P2P accounts. I mean, so the exchange would not have a bank account, but it would tie up with other people like me, individuals, where I could, when I want to deposit to an exchange, but I would actually be depositing some other person's account, and that's how my money would go onto the exchange, and I could actually buy Bitcoin or whatever currency that
wow.
I wanted.
Wow. What a dramatic workaround. And how, now that sounds something similar to like local Bitcoins that we have, and where they kind of hold funds in escrow, and they act as a not a market maker, but kind of a matcher between buyer and seller. And how's that been working out? Is there enough liquidity?
So yeah, that is the downside. Although the technology was very quick to adopt, the volumes were really, really, really low compared to the time that I was doing that earlier when the exchange was going full flow. The volume was really low. I think the major reason for that also was because of the bear market. A lot of investors have left for whatever reasons, because it's a bear market. So I think with that and this gray zone, legal gray zone, and not having an easy option to do that. I mean, even though it was peer-to-peer, it was not as easy or user-friendly as it was earlier. And especially right. because the Supreme, especially because the government put it in a very gray area. I mean, for example, recently, my friend went to a meetup where another person was coming, and when he was asked if he was interested to take a job in this field, he said that isn't this illegal?
Right.
So even talent who wants to work in the space are not sure because of this gray area that the RBI is doing.
Speaking of Indian technical talent, I mean, it is the envy of the world, as far as I know. And you're actually in Hyderabad, right?
Right.
Right. Right. And so Hyderabad, for listeners who don't know, I'll let you tell them. But at least in the United States, the H-1B visa, it just all goes to Indians, as far as I know. They might as well call it the Indian visa. And they come over, especially for tech companies. For God's sake, what, Google was started by an Indian, basically. So, you know what I mean? Like, that the government, it's so I'm kind of piggybacking off of your point here about talent, that what the government has done is so maniacal that it's actually almost admirable. So they, on the one hand, they don't have the burden of cracking down every 2 seconds and sending cops out the window to try to solve what is a would be a penal code violation in our parlance. But on the other hand, they've left it just vague enough so where, you know, smart Indian women and men who would maybe be interested in this field and help it along and grow it are sometimes very much discouraged. So that is a huge deal, right?
Yeah. So coming to your question, the tech talent in India is amazing. I mean, where you guys have a huge shortage in development and technical yeah. people in software side, we actually have a surplus here. We actually have multiple people fighting for the same job. And we have engineering colleges coming out with probably 80% of them want to get into the tech field. And yeah, everybody, the latest technologies are learned, and we have an amazing talent, especially of young people below 30 who want to get in the technical field. And most of the people that I in my community, and me and my friends, we all started our careers in the technical field as developers or testers, a different field. And yeah, there's a very good talent in India in terms of technical side, and that's a huge advantage. However, the roadblocks, especially in this cryptocurrency field, is really quite horrible. To give you an example, for example, recently I saw an announcement or kind of a speech by the Prime Minister where he was saying the future was going to be artificial intelligence, 3D modeling, the virtual reality, and blockchain. But unfortunately, now if you want to be an entrepreneur and register a company, the registrar of companies will not allow you to create a company with the name blockchain in it.
It's unreal. It's unreal. So it's sort of interesting, because if there are a lot, so in other words, who knows why for a variety of reasons, a young smart Indian would want to come to the United States or wherever else for economic opportunity. But who knows what would have happened if some of those brains were kept in India and, say, a Google was started in India with that kind of impact. And now if you believe kind of what you and I believe, maybe, that cryptocurrency is something on par with like the internet or Google or something, that they're actually snuffing out what could be the next, you know, huge advantage. That I mean if you were a country to embrace these ideas, I mean, in terms of how we think anyway, you could be way ahead of the rest of the world, and they seem to be doing it again, and they're going to push all of your blockchain guys over here.
Exactly. I think, in fact, the Indian companies in space have a double impact here, because, for example, all the exchanges, the major exchanges, are being forced to register their offices outside the country, while other exchanges, international exchanges, have it much easier, like Binance and other people, much easier to start something because of the regulations that are there. Indian blockchain companies have it much harder compared to an international blockchain company to run in its own, in their own country.
Yeah, it's unreal. So just to kind of put a bow on the technical, not technical, on the legal aspect of what's happening, where, you know, if you had a crystal ball, if you could predict the future, do you think this is, because I, you know, I've been writing and thinking and talking about India for at least 2 years straight, as far as, you know, are they going to ban it? Are they not going to ban it? And crackdowns, and as you say, these raids, at least on the upper echelon, right, to begin with. So where do you go?
Yeah, that's actually a good point. And on this basis, I was talking to a friend of mine who's actually running a YouTube channel and talks about these particular things. I was talking to him about this particular thing a few days back. So basically, the idea is the recent information that is coming out saying that there's going to be a ban. So it's kind of blown out of proportion. What has actually happened is some of the government agencies have prepared a draft saying that they would recommend these cryptocurrencies investment, trading, or usage to be completely banned. It's another matter that the bureaucracy has to go through the process of submitting it to the parliament. The parliament has to deliberate on that, and then it has to actually pass it into a bill, which the way the pace of things are going on would definitely take a long time, especially because we are trying to form a new government. There are elections that are happening across the country right now, and and until the new government is going to form, there's no conclusion that's going to happen on this for now, at least. Okay, that is first point. The second point is, even if they do an outright ban, anybody with a minimum common sense would know that it will be practically impossible to actually implement that. All they're going to do that is to drive the market underground, and it's going to give a much better opportunity to the people who have been scamming to do it much in a better way, because they do it everything underground, because everybody knows that complete ban of crypto is really difficult to implement. Look at China. China has done that. Aren't the P2P exchanges working well in China? Isn't right. there a huge OTC market? India has a very good OTC market as well. And people here love cash, and they have loads of cash that I've hoarded over the years. So yeah, so it's practically does not going to make sense. Instead, the smart move for them is to actually do it, to legalize it, put proper regulation behind it, and track everything. In fact, they would get a better taxes on that, and probably better transparency. But yeah, let's see. My take is that understanding the people here, the people in power here, if they realize that this has a lot of opportunity to make the money and everything, they would actually do something to their advantage, and hopefully that'll also help us.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch it unfurl, but it's nice to get someone with some perspective that kind of understands how these things ebb and flow. So we shouldn't be sitting on pins and needles waiting for this to come down, that even if there is a ruling within the next even few months, that it would then take however long, just like you say, to work its way through the bureaucracy to actually be enacted. So it's best now that in kind of a weird way to have it as it is now. But like you say, it would be a lot better if it was just allowed to come above ground and allow people to interact with something they clearly want. Maybe the Japanese model, for lack of a better phrase, or even the Korean.
Right, because if they're going to tighten this and go down this path, we're going to shoot ourselves in our foot. I mean, it's like we have Superman and we say, okay, you can't fly, but you can walk.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, we have an amazing dev talent and it's going to explode if it's only given a chance. But because it's gray area and all this restriction and a silly rule that you can't have a blockchain name in the name of the company that you registered, while the prime minister talks about the future is blockchain and the state governments talk about putting all the land records on blockchain, all this stupid stuff, doing something. So it's like everybody is completely out of sync. If they don't realize that and put their act together, India is going to really miss a very good opportunity because we do have an amazing talent. Just to give an example, last year when I first entered into the space and used Bitcoin Cash and understood the power of it and the crypto in general, I advised my developer friend who was a freelancer to enter the space from a technical perspective as well. I would mostly advise people from an investor perspective who are not technically inclined, but I also advised my friend to get into development field. And he started with Ethereum, building smart contracts and that. And in a very short time, he became one of the top 30 ICO advisors as a technical advisor. Because there are a lot of advisors and marketers, but there are very few technical people in this space. And he took an advantage of that and it really made a difference that he was able to pull it off. And if it's actually put into a open legal area and proper freedom is given to people, I think India is going to have a huge advantage there, especially because from a communication point of view, we have an edge over China.
I honestly believe it. And obviously, you're the world's largest democracy. There's lots and lots of great things about India. It's just it's almost the exact same parallel in the United States in terms of governments getting in the way of progress.
Thanks for listening, Crypto Savages. This is actually the second in a two-part series on India with Keshav Ramnarla. You can hear the first by going over to coinspice.io, clicking that podcast tab, and finding the episode just before this, where Keshav gets into crypto adoption in particular. It's a shorter episode, but we've received some pretty great feedback on it. And with regard to feedback and comments, questions, concerns, you can always reach out to me, Kelso, K-E-L-S as in Sam O, at coinspice.io, and I always answer my mail personally. So thank you so much again for listening. We really do appreciate it. Until next time.